to another episode of Feral and Fabulous. Today, I have, of course, my most famous baby giant, my youngest son, Jackson Howell, is here on the podcast, and I'm going to spell it. It's J-A-X-E-N. Just for those of you that would think it was the traditional spelling, what about me would ever think it would be the traditional spelling, right? All of my kids have their own unique way of spelling their name, so that's one of the things I'm still very proud of all these years later. So welcome, welcome. So happy to have you here. And since we kind of started it off with the fact that your nickname is Baby Giant, there's obviously there's obviously a reason for that. And so, of course, I say you're 6'8". I know you always argue with me and you're like más menos, maybe.
More or less.
But you don't want to be quite 6'8". I know you'd rather be a little shorter than that. So tell me, what's it been like to, you're 27 now, what's it been like to be basically most of your life tall? I mean, above average, especially for San Antonio, because San Antonio is not known for a lot of height in the city. So definitely it's easy to pick you out in the crowd.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know better than anybody that I was just huge, like from like, just like as a little kid. I remember you telling the story that I would be like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
You'd be walking around the store.
Yes.
And adults would be like, what are you doing? Like, get that kid in school. Like, what's going on? Like, what are you doing here?
You're right.
And because I was just so insanely tall for a 3 or 4 year old.
Exactly. You were still, you weren't even old enough to be in preschool.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you were literally a toddler, but because you were so tall, you looked so mature at such a young age that they would get after me. That's a great, I'd forgotten that. Yeah. I remember being in the, picking something up in the pharmacy and somebody coming up, and obviously you were not sick. You were just, you know, roaming around as three or four year olds do, you know, just being, you know, your normal self. And they're like, why isn't that son, you know, why isn't that little boy isn't he in school? And I'm like, he's three. And they're like, what? They're like, that's not possible. I'm like, yeah, no, he's just a large child or a tall child. You weren't large. You were just tall.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. No, you've always been like a string bean, you know? So.
Yeah, no, I think, I always remember that I was probably 6'3" in like 7th grade.
Yeah.
And so I did a vast majority of my growing, you know, before most people do.
I know,
and
that's true.
I gained like, you know, a few inches in high school and college, but I've pretty much, I think I was like 5'10" in like 5th grade.
Yeah.
And so at that point I was roughly the same height as like most adults.
Yeah.
And so,
because I think you were almost 6 feet going into middle school.
Yeah.
I think you were close to it anyway. And I can remember doing a back to back with you over Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you were like leaps and bounds. And you were in middle school and you were way taller than me. So yeah, you didn't spend too much of your life being my height or shorter. It's always been. So what's it like from that perspective? Like, do you feel like living life at such a tall height? You know, do you feel like it seems like you would have a different perspective?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's everything's different and everything's the same. You know, it's like going to the gym. I have to adjust every machine I go to, like to the maximum settings pretty much.
Or, didn't think about that.
And there are some machines like I can't even use properly at all.
Right, right.
Getting in cars. Fortunately, for better or worse, I'm, like you said, really just tall and not like
wide. Yeah, no, absolutely.
And so I think that makes it a bit easier for me.
Yeah.
You know, with like the jeans, you know, you had to buy those custom
for
a long time.
Yeah, still do.
And
yeah, you still can't go. I just can't go into Macy's and buy you a pair of jeans or whatever because they just don't carry them.
Yeah, but you know, so fortunately I get to wear mostly normal clothes on the top, but you know, it can be a little off on the on the bottom, but I hit my head on things a lot more than most people.
Yes. I,
you know, like chandeliers or like low hanging lights, airplanes, the little exit sign. I think I've hit my head like 3 times.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do you have to duck when you're walking under the wing of a plane? You never know.
Yeah. Or, I'm like right on the cusp of being too tall to like normally operate in the world.
Yes.
Because, know, like my older cousins are like 6'10", 6'11".
I know. You're like,
they need to like do like everything. Cause on most door frames, I got like that
you've
much
got a
clearance.
Little clearance.
And yeah. So I don't need to duck most of the time.
Right.
But any, you know, a few inches taller and I'd have to do that like constantly.
Right. Right.
And so, yeah, I think, you know, a little biased, but I think I'm like roughly the perfect, the perfect
height for being tall.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because like you said, if you were any taller, it would get ugly.
It'd
it would get
a lot
uglier.
More problematic.
It would be more problematic. Okay, cool. Cool, cool, cool. Well, tell me a little bit about, obviously you just got out of college, you got your master's, but you got your bachelor's and master's in public health. So what can you tell me a little bit about what kind of inspired you? What made you think, hey, I want to go into this? And what kind of things have you been doing with that? And what do you want to do in the future with that?
Yeah, I think the main inspiration was that in high school, I was very into, you know, science and math and stuff. And
Then, absolutely.
And then I got to college and realized that math gets a lot harder. And
yes,
I was like,
it does.
I don't quite think I have what it takes for that, but public health or just the more like social sciences, like psychology and anthropology, stuff like that. I realized it's just, you know, more socially involved. Like you get involved with people.
Sure.
And to me, health is just an extremely easy and direct way to help people.
Yeah.
Because everyone can improve their health.
Right.
And I think my biggest takeaway is that 85-90% of being healthy is just like the real basic stuff.
Right.
Just sleeping well, exercising, not eating terribly. You don't even have to eat like super great. You can just, you know, have a decent mixture of, you know, the macro and micronutrients and stuff. Yeah. And so
I've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
You just named off three of my nemesis that I'm not really good about complying with at all. So,
I think with public health, it's all about, you know, making people healthy and making it easier, like lowering the barriers to access and any obstacles in people's lives. And so I think online there's just a lot of noise, a lot of stuff that makes it seem complicated.
Right.
But especially with exercising.
Right.
You know, you'll see a video where it's like, you need to do, instead of this, you need to tilt your arm like this and go like that.
Yes.
To do this like way better.
Right.
But realistically, just exercising.
Doing it at all is the main thing.
Yeah. There's this guy that I follow sometimes who's Jeff Nippard, and he's like a science-based lifter, and he kind of goes over the research and kind of like what's coming out. And there was a few studies that doing one set of an exercise is enough to like get strength stimulus. And I think he said like 3 to 4 sets in a week, like not even in a day, but like in a week is enough to get most of the health benefits of resistance training.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so you don't need to go to the gym every day. This can be, you know, push-ups are extremely easy to kind of progress or regress depending on your level.
Right.
So like wall push-ups, very easy.
Really? Okay.
For strength, especially, you want to get close to failure. For anyone that is...
I'm always like, close to failure. Pretty much anything I do. That's how I choose to live my life.
But yeah, as long as you're pushing the envelope a little bit. Like if someone's a beginner, you really don't want them to be like really pushing themselves because their body hasn't adjusted to it.
You
want
to ease into it.
Yeah.
Right.
And so intensity, I think, is like kind of a secondary thing if you're new to working out. It's just doing anything is infinitely better than doing nothing.
Right.
And so, you know, 5-minute walks, doing 10 wall push-ups, whether it's here, you can like kind of push yourself out to adjust and the intensity.
Right.
But, yeah.
So don't let it overwhelm you. Don't let the idea that everything has to be so many reps and it has to be perfect keep you from doing it at all, because doing it even minimally is a way better situation than not doing it at all.
Exactly. Okay. So yeah, public health is all about just getting the best bang for your buck, making it the easiest thing for people to incorporate
adopt
into their lives. And you know, you address like, you know, behavioral psychology and stuff like that is, you know, like with New Year's resolutions, everyone knows that those rarely work.
Before break of dawn.
Exactly. And it's because it's not realistic for people to, you know, get off the couch and just go, oh, I'm going to go to the gym 3-4 times a week all of a sudden. That's not how your brain really works into like developing habits and stuff like that.
Right.
Add a 5-minute walk in your day, add a few push-ups, a few sit-ups,
right.
Whatever you can do.
Right.
That pushes the envelope a little bit.
Right.
You don't need to be trying to like, you know, push the envelope and like killing yourself over just trying to make progress.
Yeah. No, that's not ideal.
So yeah, it's just, you know, modest, moderate efforts can make just a world of difference across the board.
Okay. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, since at your age, you are, I believe, Gen Z.
Technically,
you are Gen Z. So, and I don't think that there's a lot known, or at least it has not been talked about as much. At least I haven't heard it. I'm curious to kind of get your take on the whole Gen Z that you are a part of, and how you feel like, do you feel like you fit in with the typical things associated with Gen Z? And I've got a list of things that I wanted to ask you about. But one of the things I've heard, because I used to be a bartender years ago, so I'm kind of, you know, I have tabs on the whole industry and, you know, restaurants and bartending and all that kind of stuff. And I've heard that the Gen Z as a generation, they're really not drinking much alcohol. And so I'm curious, because of course all the liquor companies are freaking out about it, going, wait a minute, this is a problem, you know. We don't have these up and comer, you know, people that are going to be keep
pushing the market.
Exactly. So tell me, what have you seen in your, you know, friends that are all pretty much Gen Zers, right?
Yeah, I think
for the most part,
the accepted cutoff is anywhere from like 1995 to like 1997.
Okay.
And so I have like barely squeaked in there.
Okay.
Like an elder.
You're like an elder Gen Zer. Yeah. Okay.
Because a fair amount of them are still like in high school and stuff like
that.
And so,
They're not even of drinking age, really, technically.
So I think that's the other part of it. It's kind of hard to evaluate. I would say that most of my friends don't really drink. I did have friends in college that drank a lot, you know, to be expected.
That's pretty typical of college, I would think.
I mean, besides couple sweet mates that they would anyone in a frat, you know, they would drink in excess all the time.
Yes, but I think that is associated with frats in general.
I think kind of back on the public health stuff is, with all the changes or the new information, the new scientific findings,
right?
I think Gen Z is a fair bit more health conscious.
That's what I was wondering, if that was what was driving it.
Yeah, I think just with, you know, the internet and
the spread of
information and knowledge, people are like, oh, alcohol is just like a toxin to your body. And they're like, oh, it's like incredibly bad for
Cheers.
You.
Cheers.
Yeah. Everything in moderation, though. That's another key thing. Everything is fine in moderation, pretty much.
Yes. Well, I'm a baby boomer, so Cheers.
Exactly.
I was raised in you know, this is definitely part of what I grew up on. And so I'm going out with the way I came in, you know, so definitely. But I do believe I've seen a change. And like you said, with all this information coming out, I feel like you guys, the Gen Zers, are really kind of listening and adapting based on the information that they're getting. You know, they're complying with what they hear. And that's unusual, too, because there's other generations that may be given the information and are choosing not to adopt it, you know?
Yeah. No, I think, you know, all previous generations think the future generations are like coddled and soft, and
that is true.
All the new generations think that the previous generations are dumb or stuck in their ways and stuff like that.
That is so true.
That's just how it's always been. How it's always going to be.
That is probably very true, because I do feel that way. Guilty as charged, for sure. So, but I think that there's several different things that I associate, at least in my mind, with Gen Zers. Which one of the other things is gaming? And so I feel like a lot of the, I say kids, just because I feel like you still are a kid, are still very much into gaming. And of course, I grew up with, I mean, we had a little bit of Pac-Man when I was much older. I mean, I was not, you know, a youngster by any means when Pac-Man came along, but that was in its infancy. So it really to be a gamer, that there wasn't even such a thing, you know, mm-hmm. when I was younger. But now it's like gaming is a big deal. So tell me a little bit about that. And are you a gamer?
Yeah, I think you would buy me games a lot.
growing up, I absolutely
I had the DS and I had the PSP and Xbox and everything. So
I do remember that.
I think one of the other big things with the internet and spread of information and all that is that nerd culture has become like far more accepted.
Yeah,
because I think anime is a great example. Because when I was in, you know, like middle school, high school, it was perceived as weird. Yeah. But then, like, as I went from like a freshman to a senior, there was like a whole
culture
change in how like anime was perceived.
Yeah, right.
And I watched it a lot like in middle school and early high school. I don't watch it much anymore.
Right.
But there's like a whole
culture
about it that's like now like very mainstream and
I know
just well known, like like cosplayers that you know, they dress up as their favorite characters and stuff like that, and it's just like a normal thing now.
And I find that to be so crazy.
I just imagine.
I mean, it's like, what in the heck? It doesn't make sense in my brain, you know.
Yeah, and so I think connected to that is, you know, when people are able to form these communities or just, you know, groups.
Subcultures.
Yeah, subcultures. Yeah. Like, I think gaming became really big, you know, with the internet.
True.
In the late 90s, early 2000s, when internet adoption was rising.
Because, obviously, growing up, we didn't have the internet. It wasn't even a thought.
No.
Like, that whole concept, at least that in my world, did not exist. And so, you're right. I think a lot of the things that have come out of that are specifically maybe being fostered by the internet.
Definitely, because I think people implemented multiplayer games. Like you can just like before, you had to get a friend, bring him over, and like you guys had to sit together and, you know, game on a small little screen.
Right.
But then, you know, they like I think Halo 2 was one of the first early ones to where you could play with someone that's in a different part of the country.
Got it.
And just play with them just at any given time.
You bring up an interesting topic that I kind of, it goes along with the whole Gen Zer thing, because you guys did grow up with the internet and you have such a different perspective on things and you do have so many opportunities to do things together, but separately that do you feel like that has in any way kind of changed the dynamic of interpersonal communication? Because I do find that a lot of people in your age range or, you know, age group, whether they're my clients, friends of yours, that kind of thing, I feel like the way that they live their lives is very different in that regard. And so what do you think about that?
I would definitely agree. It's, because you can just from, you know, obviously I haven't been around that long. I'm 27, but just my kind of interpretation or like what I've heard of, you know, how life was in the olden times.
The olden times in my day. Yes. Yeah. We used to go over to each other's houses. We had no phones.
Yep.
So, well, we had dial up, you know, I mean, literally when we got push button phones in our homes, that was like major. And if you had a push button phone in your room, like you were the coolest kid, like you were like, oh my gosh, everybody wanted to be like you. She's got her own phone and it's a push button. Like that was a thing. Mm-hmm. And so to me, you had to, other friends of mine, if you didn't have one in your room, you had to have a cord long enough in the hallway to drag it into your room. Yeah. But you only had one phone in the house.
Yes.
And then as I got older, you had multiple lines. Like you would have your own number and your own phone, which was like crazy. But I mean, it wasn't a thought to have a cell phone. So when you left the house and you went to somebody else's house, the only way you had to communicate was to use their landline to call your home landline to, you know, make connections. And so if you wanted to talk to somebody, that's how you talk to them. There was no text. Mm-mm. There was no cell phone. So it wasn't that level of convenience. So I feel like we spent a lot of time together just in person getting to know other people. And I feel like that's got to be such a challenge in your generation, like not just for meeting people in general, but like, how do you end up meeting somebody that you want to date? You know, how is that? I mean, how does that impact things?
Yeah, I think it just, like you said, you like, hey, I'm coming over Thursday at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
And then these people will joke like, you know, if you didn't hear from that person, you could think that they might be dead. You know,
right.
It's just like you don't know what happened.
Exactly.
If they don't show up.
No, exactly.
And so I think it made people very much more committal and just like, I said this, I have to do it because you don't have any alternative. You can't really contact them.
No, exactly. It's not a quick text.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And I think there's been a lot of articles about like the death of third spaces, of which are basically anywhere that's not work or home.
Really?
And so, because, you know.
Is that the third space? Is that what that refers to?
Yes. Yeah, so like people don't really go to bars as much.
I know.
With the whole drinking thing.
Right.
I think because, like you said, if everything is online, then it's easiest to be online when you're at home, when you have your computer and your charger and your TVs and everything.
Right. And that was probably made even more so because of COVID.
Very, very true. Yeah.
Because you were in college when COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And so that really impacted your college experience at the very end, right? Including your graduation. It was, you know.
I did luck out because the people before me, they really got hit hard. Deal.
Yes, yeah, they did.
I don't think they had an in-person graduation at all.
Right. You did, but we were still social distancing, the mask. I mean, it was just still a different altered world when you graduated, but at least you did get to graduate.
Exactly.
But I feel like that added an extra layer onto just that lack of interpersonal, you know, relationships and being in person with people.
Yeah. No, it was weird. I remember it was leading up to spring break. And like, okay, like we're gonna see what happens with this whole virus thing. And then I went home. And then I think, you know, towards the end of the spring break, like, okay, guys, we're gonna extend spring break and, you know, we'll keep you posted. And then, you know, another 2 or 3 weeks later, like, okay, this isn't happening. You need to come get your stuff and
you're
staying home.
Yes, you're done. Yeah, you're done here. Thanks.
Yeah. And so I had to drive up to Dallas and get all my stuff and then came back and then stay with you for until like August after that. So no, it was a lot different, but I'm still glad that that's why I say elder Gen Z, because the people younger than me, they were in high school when it happened.
True. And they had a different type of thing.
That's worse.
It is. I do think it is worse.
I'd already been through high school. I'd already, you know, had friends and just hung out and had played card games and had a good time with them. And so, but then if you're, you know, a freshman or sophomore and then you lose out on the whole year of being in school, then to me that's a much larger impact.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, for sure.
I can't speak to it as much as them, but, you know, like we said with meeting people in general, you know, there's this graph of like how people meet their partners, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. And it'll show like in the 1980s, to now, and it's like, you know, church, bars, friend of a friend, whatever. And then it in like the late 90s, adds like online. And you see the graph just like from the early 2000s, everything else just plummets.
Really?
And then online just skyrockets up until now. It's just like, because people don't really meet in person anymore. And the other thing I think is a kind of a built-in trust issue.
Yeah.
Is that because
lack of.
Yes. we've built this kind of, you know, two different lives.
Yeah.
In a way.
Right.
Like you said before, all you had was a phone. You're just like, okay, well, I'm going to see you at this place. And that's like the whole thing.
Yeah.
But now with, you know, with social media, people have like secondary lives where they, you know, they're doing their own thing and, you know, they're going to work and doing whatever, but then they you know, they do little posts, they see different things online, and it just, I think it kind of makes people paranoid or just kind of worried, like kind of more suspicious.
Absolutely.
Which I think, you know, it's not all bad because it's good to vet people for sure.
Some of that is healthy, right? I mean, definitely, I totally agree with that, but I'm curious because you just touched on something. What impact do you think social media has? Because I didn't grow up with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine being a younger person and having social media and the pressures that puts on you in a different way that we never had as kids.
Yes.
And so what is that like, and how much of an impact do you think that's had?
Yes, I think kind of what I was saying with the trust thing is that before you, when you lived your life, you were just doing whatever. Yeah. But now people joke about how there's always this kind of worry in the back of your mind of like, oh, if I do something stupid, it's going to be documented for the whole world to see.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Anything that ends up on the internet or on social media is pretty much there for the rest of your life, I think.
And millennials were the first ones to kind of spearhead
experience that. Yeah.
Where they realized like they would go to, you know, college parties and then they're like, oh, and then someone
couldn't get a job because of it. They would graduate and then somehow somebody would pick up on the fact that, oh, there was this video of them doing something crazy, you know? And then that would harm them in terms of getting a job.
Yeah. So I think they kind of suffered that first. And I think because of that, Gen Z was like, oh, I need to be careful.
Damp it down a notch or two. Yeah.
It's like they're just kind of more weary of like just always like looking over their shoulder and having to worry about that kind of stuff.
No, that's such a great point because I feel like I'm crazier than your generation. You know what I mean? Like I don't really quite understand, but talking through this today, it kind of makes me think maybe that's why, because you guys do kind of always have in the back of your head, somebody's always watching. Whereas in my world, nobody was ever watching, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't even paying attention to what I was doing at the time, but I didn't think anybody else was watching me, mm-hmm. so I didn't care whatever that looked like, you know? I didn't have that concern and constant nagging like, oh, be careful. Mm-hmm. I just didn't. And so I feel like you probably live your life differently if you're always thinking that maybe you're going to be recorded.
Yeah, I mean, you seem, you know, there's thousands and thousands of videos of people bringing out their phone for a given interaction. And it just kind of, like you said, it's always a mixed bag because sometimes people are doing some truly heinous stuff that needs to be recorded.
Curtailed. Oh, yeah.
Like you need to protect yourself.
Yes.
Like, what is the dash cams, for instance? Yeah.
Right. That's a good example.
You know, it kind of helps to stop fraud or from people lying about how something happened.
Exactly. Exactly.
But again, it eliminates that sense of like a closed private world
space
because you never really know because everyone has a phone in their pocket.
Is anything ever really going to be private anymore?
Exactly.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but that's a really good point. What do you think has really kind of the whole AI thing? I know I'm introducing a different topic, but it is kind of like ancillary to what mm-hmm. we've been talking about. Everybody's talking about, hey, AI is here to stay. It's not going away. And a lot of people are worried about, you know, what jobs is it going to replace? What does that look like? From your point of view as a Gen Zer, what do you think the role of AI is and is going to be in the future?
Yeah, I think it, you know, connects very well with, you know, COVID because it was kind of shortly after COVID that AI really began.
Yeah.
Like it's been around for a long time.
That's true, though. I hadn't actually made that correlation, but you're right.
Yeah. I mean, only experts were really dealing with it before.
Sure.
But then with ChatGPT, it kind of became mainstream.
Right.
And so, I mean, yeah, in the span of like 4 years, it's gone from like this neat little project to like, oh, it can write essays very well and it can do a fair amount of work just as it is.
Right.
So I think it also is kind of with the education perspective is that, you know, teachers are struggling to engage with their students because they don't care.
Right. And
they just like, okay, well, my teacher wants me to read this book and write a page and a half essay on it. ChatGPT, please tell me about this book and write the essay.
Right.
So, I mean, cheating has been around for forever, but like, right. Now
but this is a whole nother level now, right?
Now it's like so incredibly easy that there's just
how do they stop that? Like what are the things that they put into place or they can put into place? I'm just curious how this is going to impact the future generations and from an education standpoint, what role does AI because I think about the time you graduated, AI was just starting to kind of ramp up. And so I don't know that you really, did you really deal with AI very much in college? I didn't remember that, but maybe I'm just naive.
In undergrad, it wasn't really a thing for me yet because I graduated in 2021.
Yeah.
And so like there were, you know, whispers about it, but it was really in the master's program, I would say like halfway through is when my professors were talking about it. They're like, this is a thing that like we need to address in terms of like academic honesty and stuff like that.
But and again, how did they talk about dealing with it? Like, what are the things that they put into place to deal with that?
It's honestly just kind of like a general vibe thing because there are websites where you can like detect AI, but they're not good because you can write, people can write and it'll say that's AI.
Yeah.
And so,
they really can't distinguish. In other words, I know, you know, Dave is a fantastic writer. And so I feel like he could write something that might be perceived by someone else. And I'm not saying he doesn't use AI from time to time. He absolutely does. But I've known him for way longer than AI even existed. And he had the capability of writing something that I think would be perceived by others as being AI generated because he's a really good writer. And so I'm just so curious what that's, you know, what impact that's going to have on things.
Yeah, I think it's, again, the vibe thing, because AI is not good at detecting AI.
Right.
And so
it's not that smart yet.
It has very specific, what I think they're called M dashes. This like little like da 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 dash, but here's what it really means kind of thing. And so like when you see that in writing, it's a pretty good tell that it's probably AI because people just don't really talk like that.
Right.
And so that's pretty much all you really have is to look, read something and be like, would a human write this? Or like for me, I would read AI. I'm like, I kind of talk like that sometimes, yeah, like but, in certain
but
ways.
You do. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. You have that and I love you for it. But you're in a little bit of a nerd club, a little bit of a, in fact, it really cracks me up that you say that you weren't a fan of math. I mean, I took calculus 3 times and dropped it in college before I finally passed it. But you have a, I don't know if it's the left or right side of the brain, but you definitely have, you're very good in the nerd stuff, I feel like. Statistics, you're really good in statistics. Yeah, and to I mean, math is a little different, but statistics are still kind of math, I think.
They are, but I think it's just like
different
you said,
take on it.
Calculus and stuff. Statistics still deals with like real numbers and like actual real world stuff.
Yes.
Whereas advanced math is like imaginary numbers letters and finding different values and stuff. It's much more theoreticals. And
that's what I was looking for.
I saw that, I'm like, I'm not about that.
That's exactly right. I liked math up until the point it got super theoretical, and then it's gobbledygook at that point. I just don't understand that part.
Yeah, and so statistics to me is it's very accessible because it's
It's I'm just saying. Trust
compared
me.
Compared to other math.
I almost did not graduate. I know you know the story, but I almost did not graduate college because of a statistics class. Thank you, Mr. Professor, for having, you know, taking heart and allowing me to pass that class that I needed to graduate. But I do not like statistics at all. And so I feel like you're kind of nerdy in that way. And you do like those more cerebral type topics.
Yeah, I think it's statistics. It's very I mean, I haven't used it very much like recently.
Sure.
But,
you did in school.
Yes. During school, like it's very kind of grinding and like melts your brain a little bit while you're doing it.
No, it completely shears it off. I mean, it's awful. Statistics are painful.
When you actually solve the problem though, then it's like it's extremely rewarding and you feel like really smart.
And good
about yourself.
you do because you solve it. I don't ever solve it. So for me, my brain just slides right off the cliff.
But yeah, I mean, back on the AI stuff is like AI can do a lot of advanced math. Now.
I know.
And like it can rival experts in like a lot of different fields.
I know.
And so in terms of like.
So what's going to happen to people that were doing those jobs before? And if AI can do it better, then how do people make, I mean, obviously at my age, it's less of a concern for me because when you do the lookout, your lookout's a lot longer than my lookout. So I'm just thinking, how does that impact the workforce? What does that mean for the future? And also, I'm curious, what's your take on the implications long-term about education? And will a college degree be as valuable in the future? Will a master's be as valuable in the future? I'm curious. I mean, obviously, you've already been there, done that. But I'm curious, the kids coming up, you know, Katie's kids, I mean, just the people that, you know, are just kind of finishing up high school, getting ready to go out into the world and figure out what they want to do. What's it going to look like for those folks?
Yeah, I would say that a lot of new undergrads, especially in coding, because starting in like 2010 with Mark Zuckerberg and whole idea of like the tech bro kind of emerge, people are like, oh, you just need to code and you're set.
You're good. You're all good. You're set for life.
And that was true for a little while, but
not for life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like pretty much.
But they sold it as you learn to code and you're good for life.
Yeah.
And that didn't really turn out to be true.
Yeah. Because one of the first things that AI got really good at is coding.
Yeah.
And so
exactly.
Like a lot of new graduates in like computer science based stuff are struggling to find jobs because the senior people are relatively fine, but the people, if you can, like, okay, do I allocate 70 grand to pay this college graduate to do this, or do I just get this AI program to do it for $20 a month?
I know.
And
right?
It's like, you still need oversight, but again, that's why you have the senior people.
Right.
The senior people fill the gaps, and the rest of it is just mostly accurate and good to go.
Right.
So it's not there, it's not fully there yet, but it's causing a lot of major disruptions in the job market.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, I would say that for any new college grads or people going into college, I do think it'll be very difficult. I think a lot of majors are kind of facing obsolescence because it is just...
I didn't think about that.
There's just no real reason to hire new people because if you don't have the real experience.
Right.
AI can just learn infinitely, basically.
Right, exactly. They've already got the experience.
Yeah. And so if you've already done it and you've already graduated and you've been working in the field, then that's great.
Right.
But for the new people, you have the education, but you don't have the experience. And so to a prospective employer, there's just not a whole lot of value they can really expect to get out of you. And I think, unfortunately, you know, they always joke about how AI, like, we wished it would do like laundry and dishes and other stuff.
Where are those robots, you know?
But unfortunately, it was just easier for it to learn how to replicate other things because, you know, Will Smith, him eating spaghetti was kind of like the benchmark for how good an AI video was.
Really?
And so like in the first videos, it just looks horrible. Yeah. And it's like a barely recognizable person eating spaghetti.
Right.
But in the last like 4 years, it looks nearly photorealistic of like Will Smith eating spaghetti.
Yes.
And like I saw a video, I don't know, 2 or 3 days ago where it's filmed like a movie scene. It's like him talking to like a foe or whoever while he's eating spaghetti and they're like having an intensive dialogue.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just because now I'm like suspicious, I wouldn't immediately believe it's real.
Right.
But like 10 years ago, I would have seen that and be like, oh, well, look at that new Will Smith movie.
Yeah. No.
Like, oh, look at that. And it's nearly perfect. Like if you look really closely, you can still
kind of see.
But just at a glance, like if you're swiping on your phone or something.
I can give you a perfect example of that. Katie just recently published I did a little Snoop Dogg hip hop, routine up on a lot that I have listed. And I can't tell you, I can show you on my phone how many of my friends and other family members that text me and they had bets going. They had bets going as to whether, and I was so proud because many of them bet that it was really me because those that know me really well know I actually took hip hop lessons a few years ago. So, truth be told, with a little bit of tequila, I probably could have done that myself, you know, if I had wanted to. Maybe not as good as Katie had me do it, but I could have done those moves. But AI, they literally were not sure. Because they knew I knew how to do hip hop, and they're like, I think it's her. And I would say more people thought it was me than AI. And I was like, oh, I'm so proud. But I was like, no, it wasn't me. It was AI. It was Katie and AI, you know? So yeah. Definitely, I do know what you're talking about because I see it happening even in my own life. At this age, AI is still a big piece of everything that is starting to take place.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing. Like with Will Smith, obviously he's a celebrity. There's, you know, thousands of photos of him
right.
that AI can kind of draw from.
Right.
But I think that's a good point in that you have more exposure than the average person, but compared to Will Smith, you're basically a regular person.
Totally.
And so like AI can extrapolate you and make it look pretty good.
Yeah.
And so I think that just kind of goes to show just like how far it's come.
Yeah.
And just with, there was a recent, back on the gaming stuff, the Rocket League, which is, yeah, as you know, or the in chess.
No, I don't know.
What you do know is that back in chess with the IBM, the Deep Blue
yes.
thing with Kasparov.
Yes.
That was when AI beat the greatest chess player in the world.
Okay. No, I did not.
And it's been roughly 30 years since that happened. But chess is, you know, a turn-based game.
Right.
And people always talk about how there's like more positions in chess than there are stars in the universe.
Yeah.
Which is true, but a vast majority of those moves are bad.
Right.
So like if you look at like actually
quality moves.
Exactly. So if you're looking to actually like do well and play the game and beat your opponent, it's usually like one best move and then like 2 to 4 good moves.
Right.
Outside of that, it's usually not a good choice.
Yeah.
And so AI is able to recognize that. It pulls from thousands of games.
Yeah.
And it basically learns how to play chess and is now like still way, way better than the greatest chess player.
Yeah.
But now in Rocket League, it is a dynamic game where you're basically playing soccer with like remote control cars.
Yeah.
And it requires, you know, reaction time. It requires like mechanics to do like complex maneuvers with the car.
Okay.
And involves like physics with the ball, like bouncing off the wall and stuff like that. And so recently it used to only be able to play like 1v1 but then it could just like, because it's a machine, it like perfectly can catch the ball and like flick it in a way that no human can really react to.
Oh.
But then even in...
That kind of stacks the deck though, doesn't it?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Like it obviously is cheating.
Right.
But like,
no. How do you prevent it?
There's stuff in place where you can tell, especially like if you go against a robot, because it, again, just like with the essays, it doesn't move like a normal person would.
Right.
Because it moves in a perfect way.
Well, it seems like that what they could do is put you in a room where you're being watched again all the time, but watch you write an essay to where you would not have the luxury of, you know, using Chat GPT or whatever, you know, whatever, Claude or I don't know.
Bot, Gemini.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I don't even know who all that is.
No, I think in school that they do that. But again, it doesn't, the students are just going to fail that essay and then they're just going to keep, you can't force them to only do that kind of stuff because they'll just cheat on everything else.
Cool.
And so, it's come a very long way. And I think it's going to be scary, but also I think I don't think it's as bad as people think it is.
I hope not.
Yeah. It depends on, you know, who's in charge and who's doing the stuff, but it's accessible to pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
So,
I know. Well, time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good point to end the podcast on, or this portion of the podcast, I should say, because we're now going to be going to the feral or fabulous part. So you want to grab your paddle. And I am curious what you think about the ocean. Feral.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
I think I know why you brought this up.
You're very smart. Yeah. You're very astute. So yes, that is correct.
I just, I don't know. I'm an okay swimmer.
Yeah.
But I think because of me being so tall, I've always been able to just kind of kind of get away with standing in the deep end of the pool.
Because your head's still above the water no matter what,
and so
right?
I don't have anything to worry about exactly. compared to most people.
That is true. But that is true.
Like the open ocean where it gets deeper than 7 feet is a lot scarier to me.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I was younger back then when I went out into the...
Well, the story that you're remembering was, this is, you were probably what, I don't know, 13, 14, something like that. Anyway, and we all had taken a trip down to Port Aransas, and we were out there in the evening, and the moon was on the ocean. It was one of those beautiful nights. I mean, obviously there were some waves, but it was not super choppy or anything like that. And you could see the moonlit, and it was gorgeous. And Josh was with us. It was you, me, Dave, and Josh. And I can't remember if Stephen was down on the beach with us or not. But all I remember is, and you were super tall even at that age, you just walked in. And I think it was like between 11 and 12 at night. It was like almost midnight, right? And you just walked into the ocean, and you kept going. And literally, I could see just your head above the water. And I'm like, that is insane. And you had no fear. You literally were fearless. You were just like one with the water. And then you walked back out, and we were like, Josh is many years, what, 8 years older than you?
Eight or nine?
Yeah. Maybe 9 years older than you, actually. And Josh is like, I think I'm a little cold. I think I'm going to stay here on the beach, you know? And I'm like, I'm not going out there. But you were just fearless, you know? And so I'm glad you at least now have an appreciation for the ocean and what you were doing, because that was a little crazy. So, yeah.
Yeah. A moment of temporary insanity.
Yes, it was. I think it was. In hindsight, I'm like, I should, if only I'd have had a phone on you, you know, I could have videoed it and we could watch it again. So, okay. MMA.
For
okay,
sure.
Fabulous.
Yeah, that's a safe bet for sure.
Okay. I don't get that. I mean, I feel about MMA like I feel about boxing, but I'm curious to know, what is it about MMA that you like? Because I don't get it.
Yeah, it's I mean, as you know, I was never really into sports.
No.
Growing up, like,
you were going to play there for a brief minute. You considered playing football. I know you didn't end up going that route, but you did consider it. But you're right. You were not overly into the sports.
Yeah. And
in general,
all the nerdy stuff, I was more inclined to
you
that.
Were definitely more on the nerd side than the jock side.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I don't know what it was, but I just, football, basketball, just never, I didn't mind watching it.
Yeah.
But
it was not your passion.
Yeah, it wasn't until college, actually, where my friend John, you've met him, but it's been a while to see him.
It's been a minute. Yeah.
He, through video games, he introduced UFC to me.
I did not know that.
He was UFC 3, and we played it in his dorm a few times.
Okay.
And I remember the game Smash Ultimate, fighting games.
No.
I've been into that.
I went I have to a no few idea tournaments. What you're talking about.
And I was into it, and so I've liked fighting games for a long time. And so I played it with him.
Okay.
I got hooked.
Okay.
And started playing. I bought the game myself, and then I was like, I'm gonna check out the real thing.
Yeah.
I'm gonna see what this game is based on.
So you transitioned from watching it on a video to watching it in real.
Yeah, I mean, I was just like playing the game. So, like,
sure.
You know, you would, you know, throw a left hook,
actually,
a straight,
yeah,
and like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
To fight people.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'll watch the real thing, actually.
So, you developed an appreciation for the moves and stuff like that?
So I think
that
so. Could,
okay. Okay.
Yeah. And
all
I,
right.
I kind of.
I did not know that story. So, interesting.
Yeah, no, it's, and I played, you know, a couple of games after that. But yeah, ever since, I just, gained appreciation for the striking and just kind of the mindset and, like, you know, leg kicks and like body kicks and stuff like that.
It's just the blood and gore I can't handle. It's just a bit too much.
It is
for me.
It is a lot for most people to take in. And so I totally get like the gore part of it. But like to me, I like the technique, or especially like with jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Brazilian jiu-jitsu where, like, you know, the different chokes and like the joint locks and stuff like that, the technique
Ouch.
And kind of artistry behind it.
Yes.
I have an appreciation for.
Okay.
But I really only got into it because of a video game at first.
That's
and
crazy.
So
I did not know that.
And I played the Madden video game too. And ever since then, I've gained not as much, but a slight more appreciation still for football.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I think it's like by kind of getting yourself in the mindset of the athletes, it helped me get like an actual appreciation for it.
Cool. Okay. Popcorn. I thought you might say that. You to this day do not a fan.
Well, I think it stemmed from when I had braces and I couldn't eat it.
Yes.
And
you didn't like the noise that it made either when you were chewing on it. You're like, and I love popcorn. Like at the house, popcorn and Lacey and me are popcorn fans. So I'll make popcorn at night and Lacey's our Dobie. And we will sit there and eat popcorn with olive oil on it. So it's super yummy. So I wondered if you changed your mind, but it sounds like you have it. You're still, not a fan.
Probably my least favorite snack. Okay. This was not.
No, I can see that. History. I honestly don't know what you're going to say on this one. Okay.
Fabulous on that one.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Very cool.
I think I'd say it's more from like a philosophical perspective than like genuine interest.
But
because, you know, like if you need to learn your past to get an idea of your future.
True.
Kind of thing.
True. So, and Dave loves history. I mean, he's such a history buff. So, yeah, you've had it pounded into you from different directions. Not mine. But although I did have a history as kind of like my second major, which I don't even get that. That's weird. But I don't like history. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, no, I think Dave is giving me a lot of appreciation for it that I wouldn't have otherwise had. Because I feel like I try to, you know, like remember dates and like import like countries and events and stuff.
Yeah.
And so he's always like,
oh, he's just like a walking, you know,
I feel like compared to the average person, I have like a decent history knowledge.
But then I
talk to Dave, I'm like, I got to catch up.
Anybody talks to Dave and he's like a walking encyclopedia. Yeah. He can tell you, you know, what war, what year, what day, you know, even what time of day that actual, it's crazy.
Who received the message, who got the declaration of something. And it's like,
I have no idea how he knows all that stuff, but he does. So no, I'm curious about that. Okay. Daylight savings time. Okay. Yeah.
I know your position on this.
You
one.
Do know my position on that. And I am very anti-daylight savings time. I feel like time should be as time is, and it should not be altered, because I feel like the reason that they altered it all those years ago is no longer really, you know, applicable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get very angry when they start talking about moving us to permanently be in daylight savings time. And it's like, why? I don't understand that. So I think we should go back to normal time. Mm-hmm. I think Arizona has already done that, right? I think a couple of states have abolished it. So
yes. And I agree. Like the reason for it was reasonable at the time.
Yes. But no, I get
no
that.
Longer really needed.
No.
And it's actually
harmful health wise, right?
Exactly.
I have read a lot about that. And they say a lot of people actually have heart attacks and they die during the changing from one to the next. And so I feel like, why? You know, it's not necessary. So I feel like they should just, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's the stress from, like, you know, someone's kind of teetering on the edge and they get an extra bad night's sleep.
It just pushes them over the edge. It's like, okay, that's it. It just did you in. So, okay, the last one, boats.
That's a tough one.
Okay.
But I think it's just the idea of like, if it's like a big boat, sure. But like, I don't know, just like a rogue wave. I'd have that paranoia.
You have the Poseidon Adventure in your head where the whole thing goes capsized, you know? Yeah, so I get that.
Like if it's, you know, it's cool waters, but if it starts getting choppy, I'm gonna be like, turn me around. Yeah. Like I don't want to be out here.
I want back to shore. So awesome. Well, I was actually going to ask you about chess, but since you already talked about chess in it, I switched it out to the last minute to be boats. So anyway, well, thank you so much for being on Feral or Fabulous. This has been awesome. So I'm looking forward to having you back again. So somebody's just fallen overboard. I think that was an SOS call. So anyway, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time. Keep on keeping on. Bye.